Everyone, like to convene the April 23rd, 2013 session of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. Good morning to everyone. I don't know if this is a statement on Senate bills, but this is the first day of hearings of Senate bills, and we have rather sparse attendance. So anyways, just know what's important and what isn't, right, Representative Krieger?
They didn't deal with GMOs, canola, cool sugars.
And raccoons, so. Oh my, they dealt with raccoons.
So enough razzing of the other body. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 194. Beth, would you please tell us about this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 194 will repeal provisions regulating produce dealers. There's no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, very good. On the sign-up sheet, we have Jim Kramer and Lauren Henderson, please. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Chair Witt, members of the committee. Lauren Henderson, Assistant Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. What we have brought to you today is, I hope, is very straightforward. Two bills in particular, Senate Bill 194 and 195 that we'll hear next. Just to give you a little bit of background of what we did as an agency, we went through a couple years ago an exercise where we looked at many of our administrative rules and some of our statutes that we're responsible for and did some house cleaning. Working with stakeholders, realized that we had some areas that were really no longer relevant or did not work for the industry or were just plain inactive. And so went through that exercise, and then what you have before you is two of those bills. And with that, I'll stop. I have with me Mr. Jim Kramer. He is the program director for our market access and certification program, and I'll just let him tell you what we've done with 194.
Okay, very good. Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, Jim Kramer, administrator or director of ag marketing and access. So and there's not a whole lot more to add to what Assistant Director Henderson said, other than maybe we did work pretty extensively with the industry folks and have no opposition and are in favor of abolishing the statutes. Then we have about 89 wholesalers, 24 peddlers, and 26 cash buyers. So it's a program. I think the written testimony that you have in front of you is it's been many, many, many years since we've had anybody complain or any complaints on it. So why we're here before you this morning.
Very good. And my understanding from the staff summary is that problems typically now are handled through another mechanism, civil action. Is that correct?
Yeah. Chair Witt, yeah, that's the way it's been. And the relationships over the years, it's been smaller. So we have, you know, a few of the folks, it's more of a larger, there's a smaller buying group out there. It's just more of an intimate relationship, it appears to be. And they've always had the ability to handle it civilly. And I'm not even aware of any civil actions that have gone on for over 10 years.
Oh, my. Okay. Very good. Questions or comments for the department? Representative Whitsitt.
I was just wondering if this has anything to do with or still allows for tracking of goods like that are sold at farmers market or elsewhere along the roadside, you know, if you have an outbreak of listeria or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chair Witt and Representative Whitsitt. Totally separate. The food safety side of things and that is still intact and still does all of that work. This was just purely a grower protection statute.
Very good. Anyone else? Seeing no one. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak this morning on Senate Bill 194? Last and final call. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 194 and open a work session on Senate Bill 194. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McKeown, please.
Chair Witt, I move Senate Bill 194 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McKeown moves Senate Bill 194 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar. Discussions on her motion? Yes, Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yes, this is very interesting that we seem to get involved with who gets paid. And that's disturbing to me because here's a classic example of something that at one time was a problem, is no longer a problem, but we continue to do this. I think we just did it with the wheat growers here, redid that with the wheat growers. And, you know, it's a place where I don't feel that we as a government should ever be in, is to monitor how they get paid. That should be between the grower and the individual that's purchasing the product, and they should have some sort of a way in place for them to protect themselves instead of the government being the protector.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Rep. Krieger, did you have a question or a comment? I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Perfectly happy.
Great. Anyone else? I'm not seeing anyone. Seeing no further discussion, Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Whitson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Vice Chair McKeown.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. Thank you very much, committee members. One down on the Senate bills. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 194 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 195. And we have with us again, please, Warren Henderson.
For the record, Warren Henderson, Assistant Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Senate Bill 195 would abolish in its entirety ORS Chapter 583 and the program more commonly known as the Milk Stabilization Act. That program was abolished by ODA in 1987 with the recommendation of the Oregon dairy producers. And the primary reason was the federal marketing orders were put in place and the dairy producers at that time migrated to those federal marketing orders. The ODA at that time had staff who did a lot of auditing of records and those kinds of things. We've left it on the books for a number of years at the request of the dairy producers. I think the thought was if the federal marketing orders did not work very well for them, that we could fall back to that. But it's very clear now the industry has changed a lot since then. And even if we wanted to go back to the statute, it would not work with the way that milk is distributed today. And so working with them, it's time for it to leave the statute books, and so we brought that to you today. And again, it would delete the entire chapter.
Thank you very much. With stable milk, we must have very contented cows in the state. So, questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Lauren, thank you very much. Committee members, I'm not sensing that there's any more discussion here at this point. I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 195. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McKeown.
Chair Witt, I move Senate Bill 195 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you. Vice Chair McKeown moves Senate Bill 195, to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar. Is there discussion on her motion? I'm not seeing any. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Aspel.
Aye.
Vice Chair McKeon.
Aye.
Chair Whit.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. Thank you, committee members, and I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 195. Hold on just a second here. And with that, we're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 198A. And Beth, a little bit about this one, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 198A would authorize a court to order the Fish and Wildlife Commission to revoke a commercial fishing license or permit issued for a period not exceeding 2 years if the person is convicted of violating commercial fishing laws or fails to comply with the requirements of a citation, violating wildlife laws involving game fish, or theft of a commercial crab ring pot or crabs from pots and rings. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask, please, Kurt Melcher and Dave Anderson to come forward. Welcome to both of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you here this morning and talk about Senate Bill 198A. And I did want to mention also that I've not had the luxury of an hour and 45 minutes for one of our bills earlier.
Bill
so
does.
I really do appreciate that. Hopefully we don't have to take up all of that time on your calendar here this morning. So as the committee administrator mentioned, Senate Bill 198A primarily does two things. It gives the courts the clear statutory authority to suspend or revoke a commercial fishing license, and it also gives our law enforcement officers the flexibility to cite commercial fishing violations as either a Class A misdemeanor or as a violation, a simple violation, Class A violation. So under current statute, under ORS 508485, and I'm paraphrasing from my testimony or from my written testimony here, currently ORS 508485 grants only the commission the authority to suspend or revoke a commercial fishing license. Contrary to recreational licenses, where the courts also have the authority to suspend, current statute only gives the commission that authority. Many coastal counties and their courts have in the past suspended or revoked commercial fishing licenses, and we are bringing this bill forward to clarify that they do in fact have that authority. And just as a little bit of factual information background, over the last 3 years, coastal county courts have suspended 33 different commercial fishing licenses. While it's relatively infrequent, when our enforcement arm, the state police, are out in the field and they encounter someone who has been suspended by a court where the court does not technically have the ability to do that, it leads to some questions about their ability to then subsequently cite for fishing with a suspended license. Senate Bill 198 would clear that statutory language up. And then additionally, as I mentioned, and this was amended in on the Senate side, and we think it's a very good thing, it under ORS 506991, right now, under current statute, all commercial fishing violations or offenses are cited as a Class A misdemeanor. Class A misdemeanors carry with them required court time, district attorney, county court expenses, and as is the case in recreational violations, the officer in the field has the ability to cite as either a Class A misdemeanor or as a Class A violation. Under the commercial fishing laws, currently they can only cite as a misdemeanor. The changes here in Senate Bill 198A would also give them the flexibility to cite as a violation in the case where there's no culpable mental state. So with that, I'll take a breath, answer any questions, or hand it off here to Lieutenant Anderson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Anderson, and I'm a lieutenant with the Oregon State Police, assigned to the Fish and Wildlife Division. I have provided written testimony for your review. I would just like to echo Deputy Director Melcher's testimony and add that coastal courts are suspending commercial fishing licenses. The number is growing each year. So the likelihood of our officers or other law enforcement officers encountering an individual in the field that is violating the court order is increasing. So this statutory language and guidance and really clarification for the court will assist us when we do, if we do go to trial on such a citation. As to the second provision within the bill, for decades, fish and wildlife officers have been citing individuals or had the flexibility within the wildlife laws to cite individuals either as a Class A misdemeanor if there's culpable mental state, or if no culpable mental state exists, we can cite as a violation. No such flexibility has existed in the commercial fishing laws. Every single offense is a Class A misdemeanor. Some of these offenses are minor. This allows us the flexibility on minor offenses where no culpable mental state exists to issue the individual a Class A violation citation. This is actually going to be a flexibility for us, but also flexibility for the individual cited, cost savings for the individual cited. On a crime, you have to appear in court. Mm. On a citation, violation citation, you can take care of it through the mail. So you may not have to miss a day of work. Cost savings for district attorneys. Violation citations do not go through the district attorney's office. They go directly to the court, so they don't have to deal with those citations. And I believe possible cost savings for the court or time savings in that violation citations, they do have the option to take care of it through the mail, so they will not actually be appearing in court, cutting down on court time. So we feel that that provision of the bill is a win-win for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. What are we talking about? Give me some examples of, first of all, what you would lose your license over, and then second of all, what we're talking about, a citation-type offense.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure Representative Krieger understands you, but trust me, I don't. I want to know the difference.
Chair Witt, Vice Chair Esquivel, an example would be if an individual is cited for a commercial fishing offense and then fails to appear in court. The courts say, okay, he's not appearing. I believe we have the authority. We're going to suspend his privileges. Another example could be a person commits several commercial fishing offenses, such as harvesting in a closed area, closed season, and given the seriousness of the offense, the court decides the court is going to suspend this individual. And then there is no guidance in the statute. So many of the courts we've found are looking to the wildlife statutes where there is guidance. And it says 3 years. 3 years. So this clarification would actually allow the courts to suspend up to 2 years, which is the same allowance allowed the ODFW Commission.
And the key word there is up to.
Up to.
That's the key words.
That's correct. Up to 2 years.
Gotcha.
Very good. Representative Whitsitt.
I have a couple questions because I'm from inland and I have no clue on these. I'm kind of like Sal. Why do you think the numbers are growing? You mentioned that. Do you think because there are more restrictions on the areas that people can fish, or you said you anticipate more of these happening? Why do you think this is happening?
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, as more and more individuals are cited, it's hard to maybe quantify why it's increasing other than more people are violating the commercial fishing laws. It could be complexity. It could be any number of factors. But we just have seen over the last few years that more and more are being suspended by the courts.
Okay, and then a follow-up. So if 33 have been suspended over the last 2 years, what is the total number of commercial fishing licenses? And does this mean like ocean going? I'm not sure how you define commercial fishing licenses on the banks or in boats or what.
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, commercial licenses can really vary. It could mean, it could be what you traditionally think of, which is fishing commercially in the Columbia River or the ocean. There are licenses related to selling, buying and selling of commercial fish, such as a wholesale fish dealing license, which allows you to buy from commercial fishermen and then sell. There are fish buying licenses that allow you to work for a wholesale dealer to go to the docks and buy fish on their behalf. So there's a multitude of licenses at the commercial level.
Do we know how many there are?
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, we certainly do know how many. I can tell you right now off the top of my head, I do not know how many, but we, I can certainly tabulate that. Oh, yeah, it's okay. In the several thousand.
I'm trying to figure out what we're looking at. Okay, thank you.
Representative Krieger.
Might help for them to understand the difference between fishing and angling.
Sure. Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, so I'll take that as a question. The when we refer to angling, that is strictly recreational fishing with a recreational fishing license and hook and line generally, with the exception of shellfish, but that's not really angling. So it's hook and line recreationally directed, not for sale. Commercial fishing comes in a whole separate set of regulations and statutes with required licensing structure for those activities, as well as regulations that regulate the harvest and also the transaction, the across-the-dock transaction, if you will, sale of those products.
Thank you. Please.
I got several of them.
Go ahead.
Probably an hour.
You mentioned
33 suspensions, and they got into that just a little bit. I mean, you probably don't have to top your head, but how often does a violation arise that the first time of a violation there's a suspension? This is his first violation.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, you're correct. I do not know the answer to that question.
It would be interesting, I think, for us to maybe to understand that. Now, I mentioned a person to you up here, which I won't mention the name, that's 35, 40 years of ongoing short crab. Everybody knows the boat, knows him. Some of this would really get at some of his type of activity. But there were a couple things I want to clarify for the record. I talked to you yesterday, Kurt. If you go to line 7, and it mentions a bunch of ORS statutes, permits. I don't suppose off the top of your head, do you know what all of those permits are contained within those statutes? Or more specifically, if you don't name them, I'm very interested in the limited entry permits, because you got limited entry permits that are federal, limited entry permits that are state.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, so certainly none of the federal limited entry commercial fishing permits would come under the purview of this suspension law here, if you will. And these ORSs that are described here that basically are exceptions, they're exceptions for vessel licenses and permits as described in a number of statutes. It includes essentially all the limited entry permit programs except crab. I believe Dungeness crab are not included. So these statutes, we essentially mirrored the current statutory provision for commission suspension in providing that flexibility to the courts. In current statute, all those permits are given exceptions, with the exception of Dungeness crab.
Okay. Chair Witt, Representative Krieger. So the current statute does not allow the commission to suspend vessel licenses.
Right.
And then the permits that are listed, and those permits are ocean troll, salmon, Columbia River gillnet, and then pink shrimp. So any permits related to those fisheries cannot be suspended. And in addition, vessel licenses. So really it allows them to target commercial fishing licenses, wholesale fish dealing licenses, fish buyer licenses, and then any permits, licenses or permits that aren't exempted in the statute.
Mr. Chair, so we have a record, even though they don't suspend the limited entry permit, do any of Oregon's permits require landings, that if you don't fulfill the landings, then the permit is taken away?
Chair Witt, Representative Prieger, for our statutorily created limited entry programs, I believe none of these programs require landings to renew the permit the following year. There are a couple of fisheries that are in limited entry in rule, in commission rule. I believe the brine shrimp fishery, which occurs actually not on the coast, over east of Representative Whitsett, in fact, that permit, I believe, does have a landing requirement for renewal. And the sardine fishery for in its beginning years as a limited entry fishery had a requirement to have landings to renew the permit. The commission has since changed those rules and removed the landing requirement. So to my knowledge right now, off the top of my head, I believe brine shrimp are the only ones that still have a landing requirement for renewal.
So if a person is suspended and they have a salmon troll permit, and because on the second page you get over what the courts can suspend for 2 years, there's no requirement for a salmon troller to keep that permit in place and have a state landing.
Chair Witt, Representative Prieger, there's no requirement that they have landings in order to keep the permit active or to renew the permit. There are statutory provisions that require, in certain circumstances, landings to have occurred prior to the permit being transferred to another owner. But as far as requiring landings to as a requirement for renewal of the permit, there are no landings required for renewal.
The game fish. What does game fish include?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, game fish includes, game fish basically refers to all the fish when they're caught by hook and line. So, and recreational hook and line, I should say. So game fish, you know, if you recall back up until 1975, we had two agencies managing fish and wildlife in Oregon. We had a game commission, we had a fish commission. Fish commission managed all the commercial fisheries. Game commission managed all the recreational fishing and hunting activities. So we now have in statute a game fish definition, which essentially includes all the species when they're caught by recreational methods, not for sale. Food fish then includes them when they're caught under appropriate regulations for commercial sale.
Another question.
Please.
On line 22 of the bill, it says upon conviction of the state of Oregon, violation of such and such or any rule pursuant to involving game fish through the use of license issued pursuant to commercial pursuant to commercial fishing laws.
Sure.
So, Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, an example with that would be if someone goes out and hooks and lines some salmon or steelhead or sturgeon and then tries to market those using their commercial license. So they didn't catch them under normal commercial methods, but yet they are attempting to sell them under their commercial license. That's the way I read that.
Look at that a little bit longer.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Yeah, I guess my question is, why would that matter?
What was the question?
The fish is taken out of the water and sold. Why would it matter? I mean, I guess I don't understand why that would matter.
Chair Witt, Vice Chair Esquivel.
Then there must be a reason.
Well, I can answer that under the law, there are just specific gear methods that are for angling, hook and line, and then there are specific gear methods for fishing, which is the commercial fishing codes. If there's another part of that answer, then I would turn to Deputy Director Melcher.
Chair Witt and Representative Escalon, I would add to the example that Lieutenant Anderson gave for that section. There are certain species of fish that are always considered game fish, for instance, steelhead. So if an individual commercial harvester was capturing a fish that's never considered a food fish, that would be a game fish like steelhead, and then marketing them or selling them, that's another example of where this particular statutory language would be invoked. As far as the statutory history in terms of why this matters, obviously it matters to us because it's in statute, but also I'm speculating a little bit here, but I suspect that there was a time when There was a great deal of concern over the illegal sale of game fish, and those being fish like steelhead. And recall, steelhead were made of game fish in the mid-1970s, and commercial sale was then prohibited. So there was probably a high degree of concern over the illegal marketing of game fish, and this statutory language was put in to provide additional disincentive, if you will, to any commercial harvester that was going to illegally harvest game fish and then put them in the marketing channels.
Thank you, Representative Krieger.
You talked about on page 2, up in A, line 11, it goes on across, fails to comply with the requirements of citation in connection with such offense. Would that be not paying a fine, or what else might be? Because it talks about the citation, it does not talk about the disposition in court, which is different. What the judge tells them to do isn't part of the citation.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, that's correct. If the individual, so one of the requirements of the citation is to appear. And so if the individual fails to appear, then the court can take that into consideration and under this suspend the individual's privileges until they came and took care of the matter.
What other type of requirement might the court put on a commercial fisherman besides the fine?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, oftentimes in a judgment, other than a fine, there's probation or community service. Those types of requirements are often on more serious crimes, part of the judgment of the court.
Would then failure to comply with that part of the judgment, which wasn't specific to the crime on the citation, could they then suspend the license based on that, do you believe?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, that would be my belief. I would probably want to ask an attorney for more clarification, but I would believe that, yes.
Okay, that's another thing we can check on. I spoke yesterday to you, Kurt, about the difficulty, especially in the sport arena, but probably not as much in the commercial, but I want to make sure people understood. Sebastian's complex, 106 or 7 fish, but in that you got the yellow eye and you've got red rockfish. I mean, I can't remember how many of them there are, but there's about 8 or 10 of them that the placement of the eye, the jaw, and the color, it's so close that sometimes there could be misidentification. Do we have any of that history that you recall where, in fact, there's a guy sitting in the back. Well, we're sitting in the back. They probably answer that better than anyone, as Officer Clary. Do you recall any of our commercial fishermen being cited for the misidentification on the fish that are in the drag fleet or a long line?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I'm going to hand that off to Lieutenant Clary, but I think for instance, in the trawl fishery now, it's a full retention fishery. So they land all their fish. There's no discard anymore of yellow eye, canary. Whether it be widow or you pick the rockfish, there's no discard. They land them all. So with regard to the trawl fishery, certainly that's not an issue. The vast majority of these fishermen are quite adept at identifying species. But I'll hand it off to Lieutenant Anderson if he has any specific information on citations that were issued.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, the commercial industry is generally very good on this identification. We do see some canary or yellow eye kept in the recreational fishery and have issued citations on those instances.
Just like one more, Mr. Chair, on page 2, line 17. That's new language also.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, no, that is not new language.
Can you discuss, so the rest of the committee would maybe understand the seriousness of what goes on there? Because I believe that it has been tens of thousands of dollars annually coming out of different people's pocket as a result of theft, and it's a problem I think we need to really get our hands around.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, you're absolutely right. The theft of crab pot gear or the theft of crab out of pot gear out in the ocean is very difficult to enforce. We know that it goes on. We get complaints on it annually. We've been working with the Crab Commission and others to try and address the issue. In fact, I had a meeting last week with some new technology that's being looked at to try and help with that problem. We have made cases on it in the past, but generally because someone steps forward and helps us. But they are very difficult cases to make in, and a very profitable industry.
Yes, please.
Now, that would be a Class A misdemeanor?
That is, Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, that is correct. However, you could, that is correct.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask the Lieutenant and Kurt to take a look at increasing the penalty on that as a deterrent. We could get an amendment, get it in the bill, and I think it would be received by the industry, I would hope, positively. Because where I'm from down there, I mean, I can look down the ocean at night, and I know boats, it goes on, and most of it's at night.
And Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, under the wildlife laws or commercial fishing laws, that would be correct. You know, in the criminal code, if the case were investigated as a theft, there is a felony provision under the theft statutes. But in the commercial fishing code, you really have to get to a closed season type of situation before you're going to jump into a felony provision.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Whitsitt.
More for my edification, with the new protected areas that we have off the Oregon coast, are you seeing an increase in either anglers or commercial fishermen who are confused about where they can fish, either on the land or take shellfish or offshore?
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, if you're speaking to the Marine Reserves,
yes, uh-huh.
Actually compliance in the Marine Reserves or related to the Marine Reserves has been very high. We've had very, very few issues.
Good.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Just a quick question. Do you think that there's a chance that the increase is due to the economic downturn, that people are just feeling pressured? Or do you think that has any impact on the increase in violations?
Chair Witt, Representative Vice Chair McCown.
McEwen,
excuse me.
It's okay. It's McEwen.
I do not know. I don't know if the number of citations that we're writing is increasing. So I can only say that the number of court order revocations has been 33 over the last two years.
Okay. Anyone else? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. I'd like to call up, please, Joe Rollator. And is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Jim, please come forward. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Jim.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I'm here today representing Seafood Oregon. That's the four commodity commissions, the Dungeness Crab Commission, the Troll Commission, which are the draggers, stat also catch shrimp, the Albacore Commission, and the Salmon Commission. When I started looking at this several months ago, I was confused, and I think up until this morning I was still somewhat confused about all the unintended consequences of this legislation. But you'll notice that I signed up in favor of this legislation. There's some great benefits to the way that violations are handled in Section 7. I've been concerned about a person losing their vessel license because they were unable to fish. However, I think that was an there was no substance to that concern that I have, and we support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Sorry, I didn't sign up earlier. Jim Marquis, on behalf of Salmon for All, a fleet of commercial fishermen that fish in the Columbia River with gill nets and tangle nets for several salmon species. In the Columbia River, we are more highly regulated in how we fish than in many of the commercial fishing areas. There are 13 species of salmon that are listed under the Endangered Species Act that run up the Columbia River and into tributaries. And so the what we're trying to do in the Columbia River is to catch hatchery fish, which are marked by a clipped fin, and avoid killing ESA-listed fish. There are many, many regulations around how we fish, times we fish, gear restrictions, and time limits. As an example, in the spring, we're fishing usually with tangle nets in the main stem for spring Chinook. It's a 4.25-inch mesh. Doesn't gill the fish like a gill net would. It the fish gets tangled in the net by their teeth or fins. And we can only have that net in the water for 45 minutes maximum. And that's to avoid killing fish that might get caught in the net that are ESA listed. In addition to that, we have to have a live box on board, which is a thing that we actually invented. And it's a long box that we pump oxygenated water through, holds two fish. So the regulation is 45 minutes in the water with the net, and when you're hauling the net in, you have to have the pump running oxygenated water into the live box. So if you get an ESA listed fish and it's stunned in any way, you put it in a box to be revived. And these boxes are truly magical. Fish, they revive fish very quickly, and then we can release them unharmed. One of my members, 2 years ago, was fishing spring Chinook in this manner, had his net out, was coming up on the 45 minutes. There was an officer watching from his boat, and my member went over to start the pump so that he could begin hauling the net while the pump was running. And the pump wouldn't start. And he worked on it for 15 or 20 minutes trying to get it started. It just simply would not start. Well, he had to make a choice at that point. He had to, if he didn't haul the net, he was going to exceed the 45 minutes. But if he hauled the net, it was with no pump. And either way, he was just going to get sighted. So he hauled the net, and the police officer came over and sighted him for not having the pump running while he was while he was hauling the net. That was a Class A misdemeanor he got sighted with. No intention of violating the law in any way. But the officer had no choice. He had to cite him as a Class A misdemeanor. And that's a clear case of where this bill would come into effect. He could now be cited as a violation, which is more like a traffic ticket. Mm-hmm. And completely, makes sense. So we're very much in support of this bill for that reason, I could cite you other examples, but the bill just makes complete sense. And frankly, the other part of the bill, I think, just clears up an inconsistency in the law and really allows people to go on doing kind of what they've been doing anyway. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Prieger.
rarely does the officer, as you said, have to cite. Right. Some violations rise to the occasion that they should and will. Also, there are circumstances beyond control of anyone that oftentimes a warning will probably not only be, I think it does, it serves a better purpose not only for the fishermen and the state police and protecting the resource, because those people who inadvertently do something that are warned are more than likely to appreciate it and work to try to stay. In my mind, I've seen that within the law. Joe, the way the wording is in the bill, and I'm very interested in what the lieutenant had said about the illegal taking of crabs out of someone else's pots. I don't believe the way this is worded, there would be an automatic suspension for that violation. I'm very interested in looking at when they convict a person of that, that there is an automatic suspension of that person's license. So run that by your people and those back there, because that would really, that would put a roadblock up. Whoops, it may not be worth the gamble.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krueger, so you would make it, you're proposing making it mandatory suspension for violation of crab, there's a crab pot theft.
Yeah.
I think it's 164 something or other, and it's 043. Then you'd make that a mandatory sentence. I'll ask my folks.
And we need to talk with the people in the back of the room about the consequences of maybe things we're not thinking about. But if you're convicted of that, it's not that you inadvertently happened to pull a pot or you didn't look at the buoy right. You're going to have someone that's run a whole string and they're going to have a whole bunch of crabs. Obviously, they ran someone else's string. That's theft. And we want the thieves off the ocean.
Chair Witt, Representative Krueger, the confusion in my mind starts with House Bill 3262, which you just passed unanimously in the House. That deals with abandoned crab pots that are still in the water after the season has closed. And so we need to make sure that we keep that distinction so that somebody that's out on the grounds clearing obstacles, debris, marine debris, that includes crab pots, wouldn't be subject to that suspension.
Well, they wouldn't be subject to the suspension because they're not taking crabs out of the pot after the closed season.
And in Chair Witt, Representative Krueger, in 3262, it says you can't keep the crabs. So if there are any crabs in the pot, when you pick up an abandoned crab pot in September or October, that you can't retain the crabs. You have to throw the crabs. You have to return the crabs to the ocean.
Very good. So anyone else? I'm not seeing anything. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify this morning on Senate Bill 198A? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 198A. And committee members, I'm not going to work this bill today to give Representative Krueger time to sort out potential amendments. Do we have anything for the good of the order this morning? I'm going to ask if folks would have any interest when our agendas are light to convene at 8:30 a.m. rather than 8 o'clock. Would that be preferable?
Sure.
Okay, I'm seeing virtually unanimous nods. All right, with that, the committee stands adjourned. Thank you.